This episode of Between the Rows was brought to you in part by Bayer. Bayer continues to make significant investments into the development of new breeding technologies and state-of-the-art cropping solutions to ensure the profitability and sustainability of your farm. This season, grow with confidence. Grow with Bayer. Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications. Today, Alan Dawson of the Manitoba Cooperator reports on the debate over surpluses at the Canadian Grain Commission.
Reducing user fees is one suggestion. Another is investing that money in refurbishing its grain research laboratories.
Alexis Kinlan from Alberta Farmer Express reports back from a recent trip to learn about agriculture in South Africa.
Crime is a major challenge for all African farmers. They have a very high murder rate.
And the Western producer's Darris McMillan brings us his latest market insights.
Old and new crop canola seem to be edging up. The futures price seems to edge a little higher just about every day.
All on Between the Rows with this week's host, Gord Gilmore.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore. The Canadian Grain Commission has an unusual problem for a Crown agency. Too much money. As of December, the CGC had an operating surplus of $114 million. Manitoba Cooperator reporter Alan Dawson has been following this story and is here to fill us in. Alan, if I'm not mistaken, you originally broke this story, didn't you?
That's right, Gord. Back in March 2016, it came up at a winter cereals meeting where Murdoch McKay, who was a commissioner with the Grain Commission at the time, alluded to the surplus, and then I spoke to him after the meeting and got more details.
So the number is pretty big, $114 million. How did that get so large?
Well, you know, it's a combination of two factors. User fees, Grain Commission user fees, went up, and unexpectedly, at least by the Grain Commission, the volume of grain production and therefore the volume of grain exports from Canada went up, and the user fees, many of them are attached to the volume of grain that's exported, so higher fees and higher exports got you to this surplus.
So in a way, it's kind of a victim of the success of the export program that the country's had then, eh?
Right, and but of course a big increase in the user fees too, which goes back to about 2013 when the federal government said that the Grain Commission should become self-sufficient based on its user fees, and so there was a big jump in those user fees, about a 44% increase on average. But some fees, like the major one, official inspection of outgoing ships, tripled to $1.60 a ton. And since then, with inflation and so on, it's about $1.80 a ton right now.
So last year when you broke this story, I don't really recall a whole lot of reaction to it. Can you tell us why that was then and how we got to where we are now, where it has become a bigger issue?
Well, yeah, it was kind of puzzling that there wasn't more reaction to the story. But by the new year, this year, the Western Canadian Wheat Growers Association was paying attention to it and put out a news release saying that the money should be either sent back to farmers or used to lower user fees over a certain period, more than they would maybe otherwise go down. And so it's sort of been building since then. They've put out a couple of news releases. And I guess it was in March that the Grain Commission announced or launched a consultation with the industry to get its feedback on what the user fees should be going forward, beginning in April 1 of 2018 for another 5-year period. These user fees, when they brought them in, they kind of run on a 5-year cycle, and after the end of the 5 years or just before it, the Grain Commission would consult with the industry to see what the new fee should be.
So April 1st, 2018, though, that's 11 months away. And I know that there are a lot of farmers, including the Western Canadian wheat growers, obviously, they want to see fees that are lower sooner. What can you tell us about that? Do you think that's going to happen? Will this be enough?
Yeah, looks like it's going to. Like, there was some pressure, and earlier in the year, when the wheat growers put out, its release concerning this, the Grain Commission was saying its hands were tied. It sort of couldn't adjust the fees any sooner than this 5-year type schedule it was on. But I guess it got permission from the government to go ahead in a sense by gazetting a proposal which would see the user fees dropped effective August 1 of this year with the start of the new crop year. And again, it's about a 44% decrease, 44 cent a ton decrease, which would equal about a 24% decrease on the two major user fees. The one is, as I mentioned before, official inspection of grain ships outgoing from Canada, and the second fee is the official CGC weighing of the grain that goes on those ships.
So that sort of stops us from accumulating any larger of a surplus, but we still have this $114 million surplus that exists. So what's the Canadian Grain Commission proposing to do with it?
Well, the commission has said that, suggested, put out in its consultation paper so people could, think about it, that it could use the surplus, as the wheat growers suggested, to reduce the user fees more than they might otherwise for a certain period of time until the surplus was gone. And I should point out too that the Grain Commission says it needs a little bit of a surplus, a contingency of $36 million just in case exports go off the rails or there's a crop failure, something that would affect the amount of grain these user fees apply to, which would then, if there's less grain, there would be less revenue for the Grain Commission. Grain Commission uses its budget, annual budget's around $63 million a year, and it says it needs about $36 million just as a backup. So reducing user fees is one suggestion. Another is investing that money in refurbishing its grain research laboratories, and also they have talked about real-time analytical testing. There's been some discussion. The Alberta Wheat Commission has suggested that the Grain Commission be doing more objective grading, perhaps on the driveway or grain elevators, things like falling number, even looking at DON, the vomitoxin levels.
Yeah, basically getting a better handle on that spec aspect as opposed to the grade aspect, correct?
Right, right.
So now I read one of your stories this week that talked about Keystone Agriculture Producers, Manitoba's general farm organization, and they had some ideas about what to do with the surplus. Can you tell us about that?
Well, yeah, and one of them, and actually the Grain Commission had mentioned this as well, to use the money to start a fund that would replace the current producer payment security system, which is based on bonding now of grain companies. Right now, the Grain Commission oversees a program where if farmers deliver to a licensed grain elevator, and that elevator doesn't pay the farmer for the grain it has received, that liability is to be covered off by posted security. Sometimes it's a letter of credit or a bond by the grain company. The alternative to that is to set up a fund that would be paid for perhaps by the grain companies, or in Ontario, the farmers pay it. And so when farmers don't get paid by a grain buyer, they would get compensated from this fund. Mm-hmm. Probably the fund in Ontario, I believe, has a deductible, so it's not 100% refund, right. But covers most of it.
But yeah, the important thing is somebody else will be backstopping it.
Right.
So it sounds like there are no sort of shortages of ideas about how to spend the money. But I also understand there are some questions being raised about whether the Canadian Grain Commission can spend this surplus money. Can you tell us about that?
The Western Canadian Wheat Growers is sort of, not sort of. They've said in releases that they want it either refunded or used to reduce the surplus, and a rebate. The Grain Commission says it doesn't have any. There's nothing in the Canada Grain Act or regulations that would allow for a rebate. Plus, logistically, it'd be very difficult. Most of the user fees are collected from grain companies, not from farmers directly. Although it's widely believed that the cost that the grain companies pay these user fees, that it's sort of pushed back in the price of grain to farmers, so farmers ultimately pay. But logistically, how do you figure out how much should go back to farmers and so on? But the Grain Commission says that it's been consulting with the government, Treasury Board, and the Finance Department, and it believes, it's never been done before, but it believes that it has the authority to spend that money if it's spent on things that are part of the Grain Commission's mandate.
Mm-hmm.
So that would include things like the grain, labs and grading.
Building better infrastructure, essentially.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that sounds very interesting. It sounds to me like we're going to be seeing a lot more follow-up stories from you in the coming while. Am I kind of correct on that, do you figure?
I think so.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot, Alan.
You're welcome.
Alan Dawson writes for the Manitoba Cooperator out of Miami, Manitoba. For more on this and other stories, see their website at www.manitobacooperator.ca. This is Between the Rows, and I'm your host, Gord Gilmore. Alexis Kinlan of Alberta Farmer Express joins us now to tell us about her recent visit to South Africa. She found some big differences compared to Canada and a few similarities. Hi, Alexis. What were you doing in South Africa?
I was attending the International Federation of Agricultural Journalists Conference.
We hear a lot about some of the challenges African farmers are facing. Now, I realize South Africa is a little bit different in that it has sort of also a larger scale commercial sector as well. So can you tell us a little bit about the challenges that you saw that South African farmers are dealing with? And can you tell us maybe a little bit about sort of that division between the types of farmers?
Well, there are multiple types of farmers in South Africa. There's subsistence farmers, which we didn't really see a lot of them, and then the smaller scale farmers, and then the large scale corporate farms. Well, they're still family owned and operated, but one farm had, it was just so huge, like the farm within their division had a school for the local community and owned part of the land they owned part of a mountain, which is just unfathomable to me. I've never seen an operation that big in my life.
So what can you tell us about the similarities then? We all know that it's going to be a lot different, but there must be some similarities as well.
Well, some of the similarities were just in between, the ultimate similarity is, I think, a universal farmer similarity. The joy in the land and the love for the land and the animals and the hospitality, I think those were definitely similarities. What I can say about South African agriculture that makes it similar to Canadian agriculture is it's just incredibly diverse, and they have a lot of weather challenges just like we do. And, of course, there's also, that they have the same problem where people are moving from countryside into the cities to look for work. So they have some very similar challenges in that respect. Just trying to get, to continue doing this business that so many different people love. There are those challenges.
Yeah, I always think that there's a certain universality of farmers everywhere.
There really was, and we met so many just amazing people, and they were so welcoming, and I went to see, just by myself afterwards while I was touring, I went to see some private cattle operations, and I couldn't even talk to one of the farmers because he only spoke Afrikaans, and his son spoke English, but still, like, you know, we could just smile at each other, and both of us could enjoy looking at his beautiful cattle, and you know, there was a sense of commonality and the pride and just the care in which people took to their businesses and those kind of things. There was a lot of commonality, and the universal language was definitely there. There are a lot of different challenges for all levels of farmers, though. Farmer murder and crime is a major challenge for all African farmers. They have a very high murder rates.
Mm-hmm.
They have a lot of problems that would be relatable to Canadian farmers, that Canadian farmers could identify with. Right now, South Africa is in its worst drought that they've ever seen in 100 years. We went out into the fields around Cape Town and saw some of the crops, and it was just devastating. A couple of American journalists said that it looked like California drought a few years ago.
So can you tell us more about this higher risk of violent crime? Why are these farmers at higher risk?
Well, there's a lot of higher risks throughout Africa, and South Africa particularly. It's a very complicated political situation that makes the risk of farmer murder higher. There's also a really high crime rate in South Africa in general. There's ongoing systemic issues in South Africa with poverty and with home invasion and with violent crime, and farmers are just more vulnerable, and there's been a lot more news about South African farm attacks.
And now, is it because they're isolated as well? I understand the operations can be quite big and quite far apart and quite sort of rural and remote.
Yes, they can, for sure. This is an issue that I think it would take weeks to suss out. And one thing that was very different there is if you go to visit a farm, generally the large farms, they have a guest house that you would stay in, or you would just stay in a house that's attached to the house, which is, I've been to, I would say, probably hundreds of farms in Canada, and I've never seen that situation. So it's just the level of the distances do make for some isolation, I think.
And some risk then. So how do they adapt to this reality? What are they doing to protect themselves?
Well, in general, in South Africa, everyone has a kind of compound around their home area. They have a locked gate, and generally there are a lot of systems of locked gates where they have a gate around, you know, their kind of farmer estate, and then they have security systems and a number of gates around their home, too. That's just sort of general in South Africa. It can be really disconcerting and sort of unnerving as a Canadian, because the culture is very similar. Body language and cultural cues and the way you would act to another person and the way you would interact with other people is very similar. But the security levels are just some things that we have never experienced. And so it's culturally confusing to Canadians, and sometimes can be a little nerve-wracking.
Well, I suppose, because if you think about it, we're sort of the exact opposite. We pride ourselves on not having to lock stuff up on our farms. You know, I mean, that's, you know, and it's kind of shocking to us that, you know, somebody, you know, stole some gas from us and we have to, you know, lock that pump now, versus the risk of getting murdered.
Yeah, it is. It just, I've talked to a couple farmers since I've gotten back about, you know, one of their problems is getting murdered, and some people have said, well, you know, we have problems, but that's not something that is even, you know, on our radar, that would be your kind of something of your daily reality.
Well, that sounds like a really interesting trip, almost a trip of a lifetime.
Say it is a trip of a lifetime, because even if I go back to South Africa, which I would love to, and this is my first trip to Africa, the continent in general, so I hope it's not my last. You never will repeat the same trip.
Well, great. Thanks for taking the time to join with us and share it.
Oh, thank you so much, Gord.
That was Alexis Kinlan of Alberta Farmer Express telling us about her trip to South Africa. If you want to read more about her journeys, have a look at the next edition of Alberta Farmer Express. Up next, Darce McMillan of The Western Producer takes his regular look at the markets. Hi, Darce. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Gordon.
So it seems like we had a pretty big spring blizzard down on the U.S. Southern Plains right at the end of April. Do we have any handle yet on what kind of damage that caused to crops?
Yeah, well, I think the storm turned out to be worse than was forecasted. I have been seeing reports on Twitter and some radio reports out of the region that said that they got 8 to 12 inches of pretty heavy, wet snow on crops in western Kansas and as well as western Oklahoma and western Nebraska. And, of course, that's the hard red winter wheat belt. Also, temperatures, of course, were pretty cool. They got down below the freezing point for several hours, and so that could raise some issues about frost. And with that news, then Kansas wheat futures rallied strongly on the first day after that storm. That rally happened on May the 1st. There's lots of concerns about lodging from all this snow, broken wheat stems. There could be some frost damage. And, of course, when the crop gets knocked over like that and there's a lot of moisture around, then there starts to be worries about disease as well. And it also hit, there was some winter canola that is growing in that region, and it was flowering when the snow hit, and so that's damaged that canola as well.
Now, if you're the producer in Kansas and you're looking at this field that's covered in snow, this is bad news. If you're the producer in Manitoba and Saskatchewan and Alberta, however, who's trying to figure out what to plant this spring and you know, you're a little scared of going into wheat, is this good news? I mean, wheat prices have been held down by large world stocks. Will this damage set off any kind of a sustained rally, or are we seeing it fade already?
Yeah, well, it's hard to say. I doubt if this is going to turn wheat into a profitable crop for Canadian farmers or anybody else in the world. First of all, we're really going to have to find out just how much of the winter crop was damaged by the storm and if it'll be able to recover. The Wheat Quality Council, it has an annual tour of that area of Kansas and in the Southern Plains there. And it's going around, it just, by coincidence, had its tour planned for this week. And so it'll be traversing the region this week, and it'll be providing some information. But, of course, really, in the first few days after a storm like this, it's really hard to determine really what the final outcome will be because, of course, wheat is a pretty resilient crop. And the market's been surprised before by thinking that wheat might have been killed off, and then just like the cat with nine lives, it bounces back, particularly if we get some good weather from here on. And also, you know, there's always a possibility it could send up, if tillers have been, or wheat stems have been broken, it could send up more tillers and so on, as long as it gets good weather. And certainly it'll have good soil moisture, so that would be a positive for the crop if we get good weather from this point on.
And that brings us to another interesting point. The storm also brought, as well as snow to Kansas, quite a bit of rain to the Midwest. What's impact is that going to have on seeding progress now?
Yeah, it was really heavy rain in Illinois, Missouri, Indiana. There was also some lighter amounts in Iowa. And that could delay seeding some. It provided a bit of support for corn and soybean prices on May 1st. But, you know, the pace of seeding so far in the U.S. is about average. Last year it was really moving along quickly, and we're not quite that fast, but we're certainly within the range of the five-year average. And as we move further into May, the Midwest is supposed to get some drier weather. There's a lot of rain still this week, but as we move on into next week and beyond, we're supposed to get into a drier situation. And so I don't think there's any panic yet. In fact, today, the market in the United States, generally speaking, is down. That's May 2nd. And there's kind of a feeling, you know, that rain makes grain. And until, you know, rain is great up until the point where suddenly it's not great and, you know, things are too much delayed. But certainly right now the perception in the market is that in the end this rain is going to be a good thing.
So we've seen an effect on U.S. markets. What about over here on the other side of the line? Has this U.S. situation affected the price of crops here in Canada?
Well, the worries about the this winter wheat crop issue in the States did also lift the Minneapolis spring wheat market, but it was pretty muted by comparison to the Kansas crop, Kansas contract rather. The July Kansas contract on the Monday, the May 1st, it rose almost the limit up, which was 30 cents, and the Minneapolis contract did, I think, around 10, 12 cents. The market is a bit concerned here in Canada about the slow pace of spring seeding here because of our own snowstorms and cool weather. Also, of course, we have that spring harvest that we have to contend with to try to get off the overwintered crop. So that's going to be make things more complicated this spring than what they normally are. We'll have to see how the weather in May shapes up. We may be seeing some warmer temperatures this week, but I'm seeing some indications that for early next week there could be some more moisture that might slow things down. Another thing affecting the Canadian market is the weakness of the Canadian dollar. It has fallen below 73 cents U.S., and that is supporting crop prices here as well.
So what are we seeing in terms of impact on canola prices from all of this situation? I think that's sort of the headline for a lot of farmers in Western Canada. It's the one that makes the money.
Yeah. And a big increase in acreage expected this spring. Well, old and new crop canola seem to be edging up. The futures price seems to edge a little higher just about every day. New crop November is again back above $500 a ton, that kind of psychological point there on the ICE Canada exchange. And also the basis, generally speaking, is more narrow now than it was back in the winter. The market is concerned about the amount of canola that's still available to the end of the crop year. And we'll get some more detailed information on that on May the 5th when Statistics Canada will issue its March 31st stocks report. So we'll get a better handle on just how tight stocks are. The trade expects that canola stocks will be the lowest in 4 years at that point, at about 6.7 million tons, and that'd be down about 2 million tons from the same time last year. Of course, the wheat stocks, they're expected to be higher than they were at this point last year because of the wheat quality problems that we've had, and those are limiting Canada's ability to export wheat this year, and so we're just not working through those stocks as quickly as we did last year.
Well, that's great. Thanks a lot, Darce.
Yeah, great. Happy to do it, Gord.
That was Darce McMillan of The Western Producer with his look at the markets. You can find his work in the pages of that publication every week and at www.producer.com. That's this week's edition of Between the Rows. We hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll join us again next week for the latest in agriculture issues from across the country. For Between the Rows, I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore, wishing you all the best.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Between the Rows. Our goal at Bayer is to continue to progress our lineup of high-performing seed and crop protection solutions so that we can meet specific grower needs like yours. Because when it comes to your farm, Bayer is with you from beginning to end. Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca. And sign up today!